Welcome to Jeff and Jamie Feed, our little podcast. It's going well. I'm having a great time with you.
I know. It's a lot of fun. We get to talk about a whole lot of things F&B wise and from a lot of different angles. And today, actually, it's just the two of us getting to talk.
That's always fun. I love talking.
He loves listening. I love talking, but he does have to actually use his words during this, which is great. We've got a lot to talk about because today we've just come back from Nashville, and I had set up a rather gigantic food tour for us.
You crushed it. I mean, you absolutely took the initiative, put all the places together. And I was so impressed. I mean, 12 places, and it was about, what, 30 hours, 36 hours, maybe, max. It was awesome. Really well done.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people out there find, too, like, if you're in the midst of running a business, you're running the business, you're in the throes of it all the time. You're doing your day-to-day and all that stuff. And I think one of the best things that we've found helps us is to step back and go look at things from a different perspective. And travel has been a big part of that. And I think a lot of people do the same thing we do. They don't even realize it. Like normal people who just love to eat.
Yeah.
You know, like foodies out there.
They get some reservations. They maybe don't have first lunch, second lunch, third lunch, first dinner, second dinner, cocktails.
Maybe not. But I think a lot of people, like, when you're exploring a city or maybe you just want to go check out
food. It's a big part of it.
It's a huge part of it. And the idea of stepping back and seeing things from a different perspective, I think, not just for our business, but also just because it's fun.
It's so inspiring for our business, but then it's also, I feel like, you know, we've been to Nashville before, but now I have such a deeper understanding of what Nashville is, what these neighborhoods are, what the different parts of it are. And
a lot of the places that I picked for us to go to are pretty new. So know that not necessarily are they rooted in Nashville. We've been to a number of places that have more history behind them. But you know, I really picked the places that we went to in order to help both of us look at things really from like a bread and pasta perspective, because we're working on the Leaper Wyatt concept, of course.
And let's just talk about this bread and pasta, which you don't eat any of.
No, I don't. I'm not just gluten-free. I don't eat grain. So it's a little tricky. I kind of eat the accoutrements to those things. But you know, trying to look at some sandwich shops and some pizza places and pasta places that aren't even necessarily Italian, but then also look at some places that are just doing things differently. And that, I think what's the most amazing thing to me is how when we travel around, we have no idea what the nugget is that we're going to find, but there's always something.
There is always something, and that's what I always say, is whether it's the napkin fold or a cool light or a piece of silverware or a coffee cup, it could be anything. It's might not even be the food. This time I loved the sticker on the breakfast taco.
Yes, right. Little things like that. But we just, this summer, we went to Washington, D.C. too. So we had done that with our food supplier, Gordon Foods. They took us on this trip up to D.C. With some of our chefs and team members. And we went around to a number of different places. So I really took cues from them on, you know, how to pick out the restaurants to go to and looking at location, where they are, obviously, when they're open, things like that. And in D.C., I thought it was interesting. One of the things that we got out of there was a chop on lettuce, mayonnaise, and you could add things like onion or tomato that was then put on top of a burger. And it was such a simple thing.
Like, brought the burger experience completely together for me and solidified that, like, this is how you make a burger. I mean, that's how we start making burgers at home now.
Yep. Absolutely. But, you know, that's an example of just the tiniest little insight is what you end up walking away from. We also had some delicious ube bright purple ice cream.
Soft serve blew my mind. That was the second thing we ate. And, it still sticks in my mind how beautiful it was and tasty it was. Homemade soft serve,
it's awesome.
That's a thing. I like it.
It's awesome. So
what if I got one of those, you know, the commercial soft serve machines for the house?
We're not getting one for the house. Okay. No.
I tried, everyone. Kids, I tried.
Okay, so Nashville was on our list to go check out because we were there for Thanksgiving. But also, Nashville was a part of the new Michelin Guide for the American South. So when we went to Greenville to celebrate three of our restaurants getting selected to be on the Michelin Guide as recommended restaurants, Ever Ondolo, Haberdish, and Supperland, all three of those are on there. We also learned that Nashville had a number of spots that were recommended and or Bib Gourmands or Stars. So it felt like the perfect place to for us to go check out. Plus, Nashville is super fast growing like Charlotte and all of that.
And you picked out all the places before the Michelin Awards for the American South came
out. I did.
And you nailed it because I think you got five places that were in their awards somehow or another.
Yes, two Bib Gourmands and three recommended restaurants that we got to go check out, along with three other ones
And I would, as well. I would say, for people that don't know what a Bib Gourmand is, it's a, for a place that's not quite as expensive as a Michelin-starred place. It's a little more approachable, and maybe not a place. I think they define it as a place that a starred place is a place you're going to for your anniversary or your birthday or to celebrate.
And the price point is just higher.
The price point's there. And a Bib Gourmand is just kind of one step below that and casual. And those are our jams. Like,
oh,
we
yes.
really love the Bib Gourmand. So I would just say to people, don't overlook the Bib Gourmand. We eat a lot of them in Europe when we're traveling as well. They're awesome to look at for lunch.
Yeah, and also great places if you have children with you or if you just want a meal where you're not like everything is catered to at like that one star level. It's just a little bit more relaxed and that can be really
right,
beautiful dining.
Every meal, especially with kids, shouldn't necessarily be a price fix and chef tasting menus.
Yep.
So
when I picked out these places, I was really looking for inspiration for the Leaper Wyatt concept because we're going to be milling our own grains. It's an old grocery store building. We're going to be doing a lot of breads and pastas and so forth. So a lot of these places fit that. But also it's the idea of just like being open to, okay, how is Nashville doing food? How are new restaurants that are just coming out doing their food? And just kind of diving into it in that way. But I thought it was really interesting. I think we both felt this, that we went to 12 spots overall. You know, I've only listed several of them here for you to remember, but there were 12 spots. And just how restaurants within a city influence one another. And I think maybe Charlotte's getting caught in that too, where, you know, we just visit, you know, Paul Manley's restaurants and John Dresser's restaurants and Andreas Keffer's and Joe Kindred's. And so we all are visiting each other's restaurants and maybe creating a restaurant culture here that we don't even realize.
Yeah.
Because we saw that in Nashville.
There were definitely trends and feelings and that you got from all the places.
There were a few things that I noticed. On the table, many of the places that we went to had a little canister with the spoons and forks and, one had scissors or a spatula or things like that.
They just kind of mise en place the table with a tub. Not a tub, but a round cylinder
usually
full
clay,
of all the
most of them were made out of clay, but that was sitting at the table. We don't see that in Charlotte, really.
No.
I mean, we have a jar at Haberdish, but it's a little mason jar.
And while, these places weren't cheap, these were $27 pizzas and things like that, so while it's could be a Bib Gourmand, it still I expected that more than a silverware roll in a tub on the table.
Right, but that seemed to be the way
that's what they did.
Restaurants did it there, and I also go ahead. Did you
no,
have something else?
No, go ahead. You can
no,
go.
I think there were many, many more Asian touches mm-hmm. in restaurants that would not traditionally be seen as being an Asian restaurant.
I am with you for sure. It was the shoju butter. What other things did we have?
We had a Thai curry barbecue.
Yes.
And there was a curry vinaigrette.
Miso ranch.
Yes. There were really beautiful, like mandolin sliced items that would be plated in I don't want to say, they had Japanese influences, you could see, with the bluefin tunas and so forth.
Yeah, and I would say maybe that's not happening here in Charlotte because I put the my foot down on a lot of our chefs.
So we don't see it at our restaurants.
And that really came from us having a, you know, starting with a French restaurant, Crepe Cellar, where our chefs were trying to put Asian touches in all of the food all the time. And so we slimmed that down, and we kind of have to have a reason to be putting, you know, putting those Asian touches. But even when we went to an Italian place, they marinated their scallops in soy sauce, which was crazy to me, being at a strictly Italian pasta place. And then you're, you know, using these Japanese techniques that I didn't expect. So now we actually use, you know, a good bit of tamari and soy sauce, but it's all local from North Carolina. And same with the miso from Miso Masters. So we kind of do a few Asian things, but they're all kind of for a good reason. With our places,
yeah, they're a little bit more hidden too. It's just not as apparent, and I think it's something for us to think about. Just looking at Charlotte's food culture, it's you know, maybe that has to do with the population or just the restaurateurs that we have here, and maybe the ideas that we're passing from one place to the next. But what do you think about? And we won't go into, I don't want to be mean about, but hospitality-wise, I feel like we both had a similar vibe that felt maybe a little bit different than what I feel here in Charlotte.
It was not as warm and...
It was all fine and good. It just didn't feel as warm.
The service was there, and they hit their touch points, and they did what they needed to do. But it was a little bit more robotic than I would have liked and not as thoughtful. And there wasn't a whole lot of eye contact and connecting. With somebody, especially maybe the servers were tired and didn't want to be working over Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving. For sure. But we were more longing for family and connection and closeness, and we weren't.
Jeff is lonely, is what he's saying, I think.
Well, I was with your family.
I don't know. I'm just kidding. we're looking for friends.
But I think we were in a pretty jovial mood and there to have fun, and our wait staff did not want to have fun with us or joke around with us.
It was time after time that happened. And so it might be culture. It might be the day. You're right. Day after Thanksgiving could be a total thing. But I wonder what people would find here in Charlotte. Like, I know a lot of the restaurants, you know, sit-down restaurants that are about the same caliber as ours, you know, everybody uses Fresh List. So maybe we're seeing a lot of the same ingredients hit our plates that we don't even realize we're creating this food culture, and maybe we could be more mindful of, or specific types like cuts of meat, for instance, could be something, or like certain cocktails that are ubiquitous across restaurants in Charlotte. I don't know.
There could be a lot of things. I mean, we even saw it with the salads.
Every single
place had beautiful, lovely greens, just simply dressed, and no, like, you know, no accoutrements.
No cheese, no ranch, nothing. It was just a lightly dressed salad, which I love that kind of salad. And I know you're always craving a salad.
I mean, how many of those did I devour? I mean, it was just one salad after
Thank God night. I ordered them for the table. But we had some food tweaks that when we visited these places that we thought we could make things better. One of them was our sausage that we are serving at, they're slightly different, but at Supperland for the brunch and then also over at Leluia Hall, too.
Oh, yeah. We had a lovely homemade sausage. And it was more just visually, just trying to make them visually better and bigger and and with
more
a little more shape.
Yep, for sure. So that was one that I found. It's kind of an actionable thing we could do. Another thing was we had some delicious gluten-free biscuits at restaurant, Audrey.
Audrey has some of the best gluten-free biscuits. One of the first times that the butter flakiness and all the folds really showed up in a gluten-free biscuit. And I thought their gluten-free biscuits were made better with more care and technique than their regular biscuits.
Interesting. And that's something that we can at least work on and see if it's something we can do, because I could see us potentially being able to maybe offer that at Haberdish if it makes sense, maybe offer that at Supperland as, you know, something we can even make and keep in a freezer and for dinner service, you know, if somebody can't eat the porridge bread because they eat gluten-free, the biscuits could be a good option bread-wise. Just something to look at. And the last one was the hash browns. This was also at Audrey.
Yeah.
Great brunch there. But we've been struggling making the hash browns at Leilui Hall and getting them to a consistent state.
The shred on them were so thin but long and stringy. Mm-hmm. And so I think they have something there that we haven't quite figured out. And maybe it's just a different grate that we need to get to. But yes, their hash browns were awesome. I also love the size of them and the way they looked. I think ours get a little too big. So I think that they served three of them in nice rounds.
Mm-hmm. That might help with the cook too, the size of it,
I think
center of it.
That's our big, that has been our big issue. I think if we have an unlimited amount of time, we can make an incredible hash brown. But if we are trying to stick to a schedule and have them come out at the same time as the eggs and that kind of stuff, that's kind of where the pressure gets put on, and so we need to keep working on it and get better.
Yep. So food wise there were a number of different food and drink ideas that I feel like came about, not just in terms of like what we have, the quality, but these were new things. And I mean, the Sicilian pizza that we had at St. Vito's, what a unique place. That was a Bib Gourmand spot. When we walked in, I couldn't believe how narrow it was. I was literally like, oh my gosh, good, this works, because we're dealing with that with our new project, the Leaper Wyatt project, where the space itself is going to be very narrow. And it was so nice to see that worked.
And you get a sense of how much the bar goes into the space, mm-hmm. and takes over the space, dominates the space, but still enough room for a really comfortable banquette and
that focaccia.
So this
that
is
I didn't eat.
This is a Sicilian focacciaria is basically what it is, and they take awesome focaccia bread and they turn it into a pizza, but they do it in a very special way with a lot of care and a lot of thought. And for us, I feel like the hard part of that restaurant is making incredible, awesome focaccia bread, which I don't know if you've ever had Everondolo's focaccia bread, is just as good, just as incredible. We do an awesome job. We add the sourdough into it. We do, you know, kind of a long rest on the dough, and it has all of those same flavors. So I feel like that's the hard part, but then they make their pizzas just in a beautiful way where they do the whole square or rectangle of focaccia bread or just little squares.
Yeah, it was probably about 18 inches long of focaccia.
For the table.
And probably five inches high if you got like the pepperoni and then burrata opened up on top of it. And
it's
then
it's so beautiful because it has so much more height than a mm-hmm. pizza has. And they also they put the sauce on top and then they put every piece of pepperoni by hand one at a time. They didn't lay any of them down. They fanned them out like a flower mm-hmm. on top. And they had lovely breadcrumbs and cheese that they put on top. It's like pecorino and breadcrumbs that they kind of put on top to finish it right before it goes out to the table, which just added a really nice texture. They had a wonderful cream sauce that they did for another one of their pizzas. So just really, really thoughtful. You could see why that place got a Bib Gourmand.
Like yes.
why it's not recommended and why it's next level.
Yep. And a lot of it's the way the processes of cooking. So, you know, the way that you make your focaccia and the way that, you know, they made homemade burrata or ricotta, things like that. That stuff really matters. And we do that and we're really set up. And I truly came away from that place thinking, is this something we could try as a special at Everondolo? We have brilliant focaccia bread. Can we try that as a special there? Because the bread is made in advance, which we do already, mm-hmm. make a beautiful Sicilian-style pizza on top of it and be able to warm it. One of the tricky things, we haven't been able to do pizza or anything like that at Everondolo because we don't have the type of oven in order to make a great pizza.
Correct.
You need like a 900-degree oven. We don't have that kind of cooking device. So, but this kind of pizza, they were cooking, I think it was 650 degrees is what I saw in their oven.
Yeah. And I think that would cook just fine at 550 or 500.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So our commercial ovens are, you know, can handle that kind of temperature. They just can't handle the 750 degrees with the stone floor. So,
yep.
yeah, so I very much think we could do that. And I would love to challenge the team to start making some of those as a special. It's probably going to be a little much for us to do on a Friday or Saturday night, but
totally.
we could start
Tuesdays
putting
or brunch.
Some of those out on Tuesdays and having some fun with it for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for sure. So here's another little food tidbit that we came across. The cream cheese spread on that sandwich that we had at Turkey and the Wolf.
Yeah, Turkey and the Wolf, we had just a normal, what you think of as a normal Italian sandwich.
Submarine.
They also called it a submarine, as we were joking about, that nobody uses that term anymore. And instead of putting cheese on there, they did some cream cheese and capers and herbs, and they just like kind of folded it all in and mixed it together and spread that on top. So it was really nice because it's a way to not have cheese on there and have some other topping and not have the mayonnaise either. So it was kind of just that cream cheese and all of those toppings kind of mixed in olives and all those wonderful things without mayonnaise. And then they just did olive oil on the lettuce and the kind of salamis and spicy meats you would expect in an Italian submarine.
But I mean, to me, it's interesting because I know we're looking at developing some different sandwiches and so forth. And I would have assumed we'd use, you know, provolone or cheddar, or, you know, some kind of cheese like that. But that can create a whole different sandwich if you have the cream cheese spread instead. And it's really interesting. And if we can have those more complex flavors in with the cream cheese, you know, the capers, the onions or garlic or herbs or whatever it is that we go with, I feel like that's a really interesting way to spice up a sandwich.
And that was another place you don't expect that had some Asian
that's
flavors
right.
thrown
yes.
in. They had sweet potato waffle fries and they mixed them with a curry vinaigrette.
That's right.
And that was their salad? Would we call that a salad?
They called it a salad. They called it a waffle fry salad.
I was calling it a salad as I was eating waffle
yes,
fries.
Yes, Jeff, again, craving his salads. It was a waffle fry salad, literally waffle fries with dressing on it. It was not a salad, Jeff.
Definitely the Asian influences came out there again.
Yep. One of my favorite ones was not necessarily inspiration for our restaurants, but inspiration for home cooking.
What's that?
That restaurant Curry Boys that we went to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that might have been my most delicious bite of the entire weekend. Now, I wasn't eating pizza.
Yeah.
So, you know, I am, you know, missing out on that. But it was such a unique combination. And I picked this place for two reasons. One, it was right across the street from one of the Bib Gourmand restaurants that we were visiting. But secondly, they mashed together two things that I had never thought about putting together. And that was like a Southern smoked barbecue, both pork and brisket, and then curry. And they were using Thai curries and putting those two together and serving that on top of rice. And I just loved it.
I really connected with the inspiration story for the restaurant when they were telling us.
It was so real.
Yeah. So they were saying that the guys that came up with the concept grew up in Texas and their parents would make the curry soup and the rice and have everything there. And then his dad would go to the local barbecue place and get brisket or pork barbecue.
But it was leftovers is what they would
say. And bring that back and they would eat that. And it reminded me too of the way that Haberdish came about and that we would go to Price's Chicken Coop and pick up, we'd have neighbors come over and we'd have a little party at our house and we'd go to Price's Chicken Coop and pick up one, two, three whole fried chickens. And then everybody would do their own more healthy sides and just better sides than what they offered, where we'd roast Brussels sprouts and we'd make really nice salads and not waffle fry salads, but actual salads with beautiful greens. And then that would be our dinner. And that's kind of the inspiration for Haberdish, where we thought, wow, could we make a fried chicken place that had really nice sides and, mm-hmm. and some of these beautiful accompaniments?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I love that. Well, this is a slight deviation off of the food, but another learning that I thought was so invaluable was when, this was from Audrey again, I found that place very inspirational. When we ate brunch, there were four of us at the table, they brought over a family style menu. And it was $65 a person. And you would be coursed out these a variety of different foods brought to your table. You didn't have to make any choices. They would just bring the best from their kitchen, as they said. And I thought that was really interesting because I think when we're looking at Leiluia Hall, we've just opened for brunch there. And I think our price per guest is maybe a little bit lower than we had hoped. You know, it's I don't know what it is, but it's probably $45 or $50 a person. And it's very valuable to be able to increase that in any amount that we can. So if we could create a family style menu that would give people a lot of great offerings from our menu, from the raw bar and the snack section, and then entrees as well, have a beautiful brunch, and take away any, you know, decisions people have to make and know that you're given our best.
So nice to just show up in the morning and just say, yeah, just give us the family style. And we couldn't do that because you don't eat grains and Carrie has a restricted diet as well. And they didn't have really any options on their family style. So I would like to explore doing something like that, but giving a few options to help people work around some of those dietary restrictions and have just a lovely, fun, stress-free meal where people just keep throwing food at you course after course.
Yep. And sometimes when we're out and about checking out restaurants, we've talked a lot about what was valuable that we could bring home. But another thing is sometimes you learn what not to do. How about when it was really super cold and it's 4:50 and we show up early to our reservation?
Yeah.
And that was an interesting thing. And I know Jeff has talked about, he's probably going to put something out on our restaurants, all Slack channel. And that if it's cold outside and guests are waiting outside, just let them in. Let them just hang out.
I know we got there 7 or 8 minutes before opening time, but they saw us freezing outside, the whole staff. And I know they had some computers to put away still and some things to pack up. But I think people that are cold would be very understanding of that and know that the restaurant doesn't open for 5 more minutes. But don't leave people out in the cold, guys. Just let them let them come in and
just stand right near the host stand. They can huddle together there by the door.
And just say, hey, we just need to, you know, finish up getting ready. We don't open for 5 more minutes, but please come inside. Yeah. And it was the first cold day. But yeah, I think that's just something to keep in mind hospitality wise as we get into the winter.
Yeah, that piece is actually why you're open and why people are coming, is that they can feel warm and welcome and enjoy food and drink, yes, but also have that warmth. And I think coming away from Nashville, I really feel like our team is on track and on pace to be, you know, not just the best here, but in this whole region. I feel like the hospitality that our team provides is really excellent. And maybe it's because I love them and like I can, they're warm to me, but like I truly feel that when I see them with other guests too. It feels warm.
For sure. And I think all of Charlotte, we kind of want all of Charlotte to be the hospitality city. So.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you and I do. We're going to put that out right now, right? We think Charlotte could be a city of hospitality. Like that is what we could be known for, is how warm and services. Yes, and I feel that when I go to other people's restaurants.
Exactly.
Too.
The service here is special. And I think all the service workers, we do care as a group, not just our people, but we're going to make sure our people care and let people in early.
I think one of the big things too, that was very notable, is how well our team here, and honestly, I feel this at a lot of restaurants in Charlotte, how they serve guests with allergies. I've always felt welcomed and I'm easily able to find something to eat off a menu. But there was actually one restaurant that we ate in that I could only eat one dish, the salad, and that was a rarity for me. So I think I walked away from that feeling like we're doing a great job serving people with unique diets.
They had gluten-free pasta on their menu, and they felt like, oh, that's enough. We have everybody covered. But I think they didn't really think through a little bit more of gluten and putting
gluten impacted
in marinades and those kind of things.
It impacted my sister too, because she's a type 1 diabetic, and so she cannot eat a lot of carbs. and they didn't have any vegetables or anything on the sides other than one salad. They didn't have any meats. It was all pastas. And I think that that made it tricky to dine out. So I love, you know, the idea of having that more balanced menu and being able to serve people, even who are vegan. Hey, we can make you vegetables off the grill. And that kind of hospitality is really something it, that, that
it,
we can
it
do
also
a great job of.
Made it difficult. I love having that coursed menu and really enjoying the night. But yeah, the way not having sides, not having any meat courses or any of that, it really just made it a 2-course max meal. It's kind of like you're having your salad and then you're having your pasta and that was it. And so that was definitely a shortened meal.
And yeah, and I think they're leaving money on the table too because of it.
Yeah, we would
a lot of it. I would have bought an $85 steak if it was sitting there.
And I would have bought another bottle of wine.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, it was great to pop through Nashville and get all those different insights and inspiration. And we'll be pulling some of these ideas into our restaurants, too, as we go forward, just to constantly stay fresh and offer better hospitality and new ideas and food and drink and so forth. So,
And I guess I got to loosen up and let us get a few more Asian-inspired touches on our food.
I think it could be fun at some places. You know, I think there's some good spots to do that.
There's places where it fits.
Where it fits. So. I love it. Well, thank you all for joining us. Please like, subscribe, share. We'd love to hear from you too. And we'll see you next time.